The board, which made the decisions, and Mrs. Blatch, of course, was always in the office. My sister, I think Mrs. Blatch was the only officer who was all the time at headquarters. The others were all having jobs of their own, one kind or another, and they were just serving on the board. I don't remember too much about that. Of course, I was not on the board, so I would only know a little from hearsay. It was a fairly good-sized organization, and of course we had many, many volunteers. As you know, most suffrage work was done by volunteers. And we had lots of volunteer speakers. We had speakers out on the street every night. We used to use quite literally soap boxes with handles fastened on the end so that you could carry them. We made quite good stand-ups. That's why I said to you that I thought that I wouldn't be very much help to you about the larger aspects of the thing, because I didn't stay in it long enough. And of course, after I left the suffrage organization and went into the advertising, I also spoke for them ever so often, rather often, as a matter of fact. And during the last campaign, now let me see. No. During the campaign in New York State for suffrage, at which we were turned down. That is not right. I'm going to turn this off now, how I think. The pain came. I did speak. I took time off and had her looked after and spoke continuously for the last week or so.
The ratification.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you mentioned that Mrs. Black was autocratic, was this in terms of the way in which decisions were made, or the way in which she related to the other workers? That?
Both, I would say. My sister might or might not agree with me. I don't know. That's the impression I had from my point of view. She was very autocratic.
Did you have any open conflicts with her over this, or was it just a matter of you being discomforted by it?
No, I did, but you'll have to turn this off again. That's very difficult, I think, many of them to work with. In fact, I may say that I would suspect that Mrs. O.H.P. Belmont was a horrible tyrant in her organization. Had that reputation anyway. I never worked for her, of course. And certainly I think that Mrs. Blatch was. I don't think Mrs. Carrie Chapman Catt ever had that reputation. I have never heard that she did. I think she had very firm opinions, but I always gathered that she was a person rather easy to get on with. And of course, Howard Anna Shaw was a wonderful person. She was never the head of any organization. I don't think she ever wanted to be. But she was a marvelous person.
Do you think that it was because they were so single-minded about the issue that there was that seemed to be almost a prejudice?
Well, I don't know. You certainly have met plenty of what we colloquially call bossy women. And they are apt to be the women of a great deal of drive, the women that get things done. And they are very apt to be sure that they're right, that they don't want to waste time hearing arguments against their point of view. No, I think it's quite understandable.
Mm-hmm. So actually, except for the Women's Suffrage Association, the American Women's Suffrage Association, most all the other groups had that reputation.
Well, I have that feeling that certainly they did. I heard people muttering about Mrs. Belmont and
she looked formidable.
Yeah, I think she was. And certainly Mrs. Blatch was.
Now, when you went down to New York, you, your sister and brother were already there, and the plan was for your mother and you to go down. Had you also, by that time, planned to be married?
Yes, I was married in October. And we first lived in the same apartment as my mother and sister.
Mm. And so for the first, those first few months, you worked almost full time with the...
Oh, yes.
After this falling out is when you decided to try and get Macy's to take your...
That's right.
Now, before we leave that period, I asked you initially if you had defined yourself in those days as a feminist. And I wanted to...
I don't really think I ever... I think that it wouldn't have occurred to me to call myself a feminist. When you said feminist, I thought of people like Olive Schreiner and Mrs. Pankhurst and Charlotte Perkins Gilman, so forth and so on.
Well, how did you see them as being different?
Well, how shall I say it? Being so interested in the one thing that they hardly had time for other things. I think always, all my life, just like my courses in college, I have always wanted to be interested in a great many things. Of course, that's the reason they got things done, is because they did channel all of their interest in one direction.
But did you see it linked up with attitudes towards men at all, or attitudes towards marriage?
Well, I used to think it was rather funny, some of the English women that came over, Forbes Roberts and people like that, there was a great deal of talk among them. I don't ever recall very much of this among the American women, but the English women were very fond of talking about free unions, and their children were going to have hyphenated names, and... like Havelock Ellis and his wife, perhaps they were going to have houses on the opposite side of the park. And, they were very interested, and they felt that the conventional marriage was not right, wasn't fair to women. And they reflected, of course, the much more difficult position, I think, of women in England than in America, because American women have always had more freedom. You may or may not recall that famous little curtain raiser of Ethel Barrymore's called The 12-Pound Look.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was marvelous. It was laid in England, and The 12-Pound Look was the cost of the typewriter with which she made herself economically independent. My husband left him as soon as she learned to type.
Hmm.
The 12-Pound Look.
But ideas about women's economic independence were, you didn't see as being the crucial distinction between, say, a feminist and a suffragist?
I don't recall ever being concerned with that. And the odd part of it is, I'm sure you will think this is odd. Is this thing on?
No,
it's on. Take it off.
It seems like what you're saying is that you never fought any of the other possible battles that women who you defined as feminists were fighting, like equal pay, etc.
No, I can't say that I did. Once or twice other agencies flirted with me a little. And I remember I had a long session with J. Walter Thompson. I used to know Mrs. J. Walter Thompson in suffrage. And we had lunch together occasionally, and then she married the man who owned J. Walter. And I was already doing quite well, my own concern. And one day she sounded me out about this business, and I inquired about the way they worked. And I just said it was not for me. I had a very odd relationship, you might say, with my job. And I knew it. And I think I wouldn't have lasted in any other kind of a job, frankly, because the president of the organization, first place, I was the first woman they'd ever had except for a file clerk. I was the first, they took me on as a copywriter and then very quickly made me an account executive. And the president discovered quite soon, within about 5 years, that if he just left me alone, I would make money for them. And so he practically never interfered. I mean, it reached the stage where I never any longer consulted him about what I was going to say to the client or what we were going to do. I wrote him a memo afterward and told him what had been decided that we would do, you see. And that amount of freedom, real authority, I began to discover was almost unknown among women. I belong to things like the Women's Fashion Group and so forth. And once or twice, the women at the fashion group were heading up fashion departments in my own clients' organizations. So that while I was dealing with the president of their organization, I was discovering that actually they had very little real authority, whereas I had almost complete authority. And that was the thing that I became convinced in talking to Mrs. J. Walter and I remember Barton Durskin once played with the idea of leading me off, that I would never have anywhere else. And I knew myself well enough to know that that was much more important to me than a larger salary, which I certainly would have gotten with any of the others that wanted me.
Oh, I see. Now, would you have defined your sister as a feminist?
Yes, my sister definitely was a feminist.
And it was that concern?
She did all kinds of things. I mean, she started the Bond Club, as I recall it, the Women's Bond Club in Wall Street. She was really quite prominent.
So it was that focus primarily on women and advancing women and the women's world. Mm-hmm. That extended beyond the suffrage question.
Right? Oh, yeah, very much so.
Now, the sequence was that you began to work at, you left the Women's Political Union, and then
a friend of my sister's came, and they were consulting about what kind of business, and among other things, of course, my sister had long before told me, don't ever, ever, ever study stenography. Said she, what man studies stenography to get started in his job? You'll just get sidetracked, so you just don't know it. And so didn't have that to offer to anybody, so they had to think. And I remember very well, a friend of my sister said, well, she's been doing an awful lot of writing this summer. You see, I had sent advance releases, and then when I got through in the town, I gave them another big interview and a release. So I've been doing a whole lot of publicity writing. And the friend said, why don't you try the advertising business? You might write copy quite well. I didn't even know what copy was. It had to be explained to me. And so that is how I began to make the rounds of she gave me names of advertising agencies and retail stores. And that's when I got the job at Macy.
Yeah, and then you became pregnant a couple of months after you were working there.
Well, my daughter was born in January of 1915, so yes, I must have, quite soon, but I didn't quit right away.
Had you intended to have a family?
I don't think I ever thought about it one way or the other.
And then,
I certainly hadn't planned to have one that minute.
No. And then you moved out of New York and didn't move back into New York until your daughter was 2 and a half.
Yes, I came back to New York I remember quite well when I went to the Federal Advertising Agency, and that was the same week that we declared war. It was 1917, Holy Week. Good Friday, I think, to be exact, is when we declared war. Nice time.
What was your life like during that period when you weren't working? Were you involved outside of the home, or were you involved primarily?
Oh, no. Involved basically with the baby. And of course, we had moved out of my mother and sister's apartment when we went to East Orange, and things were very tight. I've forgotten what my husband's salary was, but it was tiny. Of course, everything cost less in those days. My house allowance was $5, I remember, for food. And I wasn't a very good provider, knowing nothing whatever about it. See, we had always had servants of some kind or other. And I just never did. I didn't mean to deal with running a house. But always when we got to Friday, I remember we nearly always had to have cabbage because it was only 5 cents a head.
So your decision to return to work was primarily your sister's?
Yes, it really was. I naturally knew that we could use more money, but basically, she really shamed me into going back to work. I didn't think it was possible, but discovered, of course, it was.
To both work and have the daughter, the young child.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It was difficult, I have to say. Our apartment had these deep windows with window things in them. And I had to walk every morning past that front window on my way to the subway to work. And my small daughter used to stand up in the window with the tears running down her cheeks. And I used to feel like a dirty dog. It was very difficult.
Mm.
And yet I did think it was the right thing to do, and I'm sure that I told you that I made a special arrangement with the agency when I went with them.
Oh, in terms of your hours?
That I would go home at 3 o'clock every day. So, that was the only concession to it.
Now, during that time period, there were a couple of brief times that you did go out and speak, you mentioned, during that
Oh, up until the time we got suffrage, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was still for the Women's Political Union. You just
yeah.
didn't want to close contact with them.
No, I didn't mind speaking for mm-hmm. them. Because my sister was still working with them.
Now, did you become involved in any professional organizations then in those early days in your career? Were there women, enough women in that field to have...
You know, I'm trying to think. I belonged fairly early to the Women's Fashion Group. That was necessary. I was never much of a joiner, I must say. I belonged to a certain number of business things, like Men's Marketing Association and all that sort of stuff. I'm trying to think. I belonged to a couple of clubs, but they had nothing to do with business.
Were any of them groups that were involved in that after the passage, after the ratification, there was that Women's Joint Congressional Committee?
No, these were entirely different. How shall I say? They were made up of women who definitely were the suffrage type of women. But one of them, they used to have a very interesting club of very unusual women to which my sister belonged. And one woman had a big bus with the head of that. You can imagine they were all women's minds of their own. And she broke off and formed another organization. And later on, it had been going for some years, later on, my friend Blair Niles insisted on my joining that. It was called Query Club. And it was an extremely interesting club because of the women that belonged to it. Most of them were writers. A few were, one woman was an explorer. They were all quite well-known women, as a matter of fact. It was a very interesting club. And the other one, was more of a debating club. And for a while, I belonged to the Phi Beta Kappa chapter in New York. I got bored with that very quickly. I didn't do that very long.
Well,
I never have been much of a joiner.
Mm-hmm. Because after the ratification, during the 20s, there was, of course, Alice Paul's group that started pushing, even then, for the Equal Rights Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That if you had belonged to any of the groups that were supporting
them. No, I didn't do another darn thing about suffrage or groups of that kind afterwards.
Because then in the 40s, there seemed to be another upsurge and then a real push again for the Equal Rights mm-hmm. Amendment, which in many of the women's clubs seem to have been involved in.
No, I never did. Mm.
Then you stayed at the federal agency until 40. Oh, now you were divorced in what year?
1928.
And then you remarried in
1929.
And so you stayed at the federal agency continuously until 47.
Yes, I'm trying to think whether it was 47. Yes, it was. Was it 47 or 48? Excuse me a minute.
Here.
Eight that I left Chevron. Mm-hmm.
And then you,
In June, it must have been, I guess.
June 48. And then, were you living in New York City that up until that time then?
Well, I went right on mm-hmm. living in New York City, yeah.
Then during that 5 or 6 years during which you retirement,
yeah.
You stayed in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And what were your activities like during that time period? By that time, your daughter was grown and I imagine gone, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say I had very much in the way of activities. It's a lovely little picture of me.
Now that does not, I was told by how much that does.
It didn't look like me then, even. There was the first president. This was the president I worked for so many years.
Oh.
Head of federal, not the new one. Came in after RT retired. I don't think there's anything else in here. Oh, yeah, all the letters when I came back into the business. A great many letters, of course, when I left, because how did they know what I was going back to be a director somewhere else? They all had to get in their best licks. Oh, this, I'm sure I told you about this. I kept this because I still think it's a scream. Did I tell you about my string? Well, I'll be sure the thing is turned off again. Oh, I don't think there's anything much else.
Organizations, for the most part, were the business organizations mm-hmm. and these other clubs.
Yeah.
And during this period of retirement is when you, that first period of retirement is when you became involved in some of that activity.
No, that period of retirement, because I was utterly worn out, took a long time to recover. I don't think I did much except a little writing here and there. So.
Did you continue your public speaking in all of those years?
I did quite a lot. Of course, I had to talk very often to boards of directors and things of that kind, which you may or may not consider public speaking, mm-hmm. but it falls into the same group. And once I went out to Cornell to speak to them, and once I remember going to Philadelphia to address an advertising group. And few things like that, but nothing else special.
Mm-hmm. Then you retired again in 58.
Yeah.
And that was when your husband had also retired.
Yeah.
And, or did you get involved in any other kinds of activities during that time after that retirement?
No, we began to travel then. Mm-hmm. We traveled a great deal.
Around the United States or also?
Mostly in Europe, because my husband is a European and we had an awful lot of friends over there. We'd always been going back and forth. And so then in we went first, and right after he retired, we spent the winter at at the Instituto Garayendi in Mexico, mm-hmm. studying. And then we spent the summer on Bucks County in our place. And then we went again. We went out, make up our mind to live out here in California and drove all over California. And then in 60, we went abroad for a year until the Mount San Antonio Gardens was built. Mm. Because we had ordered a cottage there.
Mm-hmm. Now, that brings us up to the discussion we started out with, which was some of your feelings and attitudes towards the modern women's movement, and how, well, some of your feelings about it, and how you think it compares to the original suffrage movement.
Well, it's very hard to compare it because it's so much wider and deeper. A movement than that was. That was really a political job, and it was handled like a political job, more or less. But this seems to me to involve, oh dear, how shall I put it? This movement now, I think, springs from much, much deeper grounds than the suffrage movement. It involves, really, women's estimate of themselves and what they feel they could contribute to the world. And also, I think, whereas women thought it definitely unfair that they couldn't vote, that's true. But I think now women conceive of the inequality as something a great deal more serious than a personal affront, shall I say that. They realize that it has a lot to do with the kind of world we have and the kind of mess we're in, and that the only valid hope for the future lies in true equality. And of course, as you know, as I told you before, I think women have a lot of changing to do too. I listen with horror to the chit-chat that goes on in a normal group of women. And I'm not surprised that men make snide remarks about girl talk and so forth and so on. Because that isn't the kind of thing that's involved in the present movement. And I blame it mostly on the fact that I live and mostly see women in my own age group. They're not going to change. And most of them are quite horrified, I think, at the changes that younger women want. And of course, it just so happens that I go along with the younger women, so I mostly have to keep my mouth shut.
How about your own daughter? Is she what sort of attitudes does she have towards the women's movement? Is she in any way involved?
I don't think she's at all interested. She's made a marvelous career herself, but I have never known her. She is entirely wrapped up in art. I don't really think anything in the world exists actually outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she does read the papers and probably Time and the New Yorker, but I don't think she spends very much of her time thinking about the world's affairs mm-hmm. in general. I think she's mostly basically concerned with her own immediate problems.
Well, would you say in terms of the way in which you depicted the modern women's movement, in some ways it's similar to the ideas of the women in the early movement who were considered feminists?
Yes.
Movement.
I think this movement that's going on now goes back to the roots. And they wrote very well. I don't know how much of Charlotte Perkins Gilman you've ever read, but she writes well. And Olive Schreiner, of course, I always think of with special feeling because I felt that she, of perhaps all of them, had the least bitterness. She thought of it in terms of what it could become. And I also felt she was very much fairer to men. I can't help reminding women that up to the time the suffrage amendment was ratified, every single thing that American women had legally in terms of consideration was given them. They had no way to get it. And I think they were very unappreciative of how much they had actually been given because of men's own sense of justice. And that's one reason I got very impatient with them when they are too bitter. Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps if I'd had a different kind of life and different kinds of associations with men, I too would feel bitter, but I don't, and I think it's a great drawback, because as I have written my daughter, I look on bitterness as a kind of cancer of the heart. I think you get nowhere with it, and it's one of the most deadly things that one can give way to.
But you see that as one of the major failings, mm-hmm. then?
Yes, I definitely do, and I'm astonished at some of the things that I read. Now, how much they've been blown up by the media, of course, mm-hmm. one doesn't know. And I am far from saying that I'm silly enough not to know that a great many women have ample reason for the bitterness they feel. But I think it's a defect when you're working for equality.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that that bitterness is quite new? Do you think that women felt that earlier and just didn't express it? Or?
Oh, no. Women, many women felt very, very bitter in suffrage days. Oh, many of them. With good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never a help. It's my feeling about it.
I tend to feel that it seems to be the first step towards, and then you get beyond it.
Well,
maybe.
Figure
out where you go from there.
Maybe. Possible.
Do you have any ties at all to some of the women's organizations, like some of the ones that have been working on the Equal Rights Amendment? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know Jesse belongs to that Pomona Valley Now organization.
Mm-hmm.
She's told me about some fights she had over the Equal Rights Amendment at the, I think she said it was the Claremont Women's Club.
Oh, yes. She's always been a great joiner of all kinds.
Are there any other comments or reactions about the modern women's movements or comparisons that you might have?
Well, I'm not particularly eager to make unkind comments on them. I have every sympathy with their goals.
Your major criticisms seem to be related to the issue of bitterness and sometimes focusing on issues that you think are not as important or as relevant.
Well, and I find so many of them, when I hear them speak, I find them strident and disagreeable. I'm sure I've heard Jessie rave on about what goes on in their now meeting. She also is repelled, I think, by a great deal of it. It's the old story. People don't really get outside themselves enough. I get very impatient with their bringing up individual grievances about things. I don't understand why they don't work more through groups of women. I have very definite ideas about what they could be doing with groups of women, but as I see it, they are not doing. Women's groups seem to feel that they have to operate in a vacuum. If they belong to one little group, it's dedicated to doing this particular thing, and they're not at all concerned with what's going on out here and around. And I think that's all wrong for this movement of women. I think that every woman's group has a stake in this movement, even though they are not made up to fight for it. I don't care what the individual special interest is of that group.
Mm-hmm.
They should have an overall interest in all women. And every organization speaks with a louder voice than its individual members, so that you could... If the group which is especially interested in this could only learn how important it is to approach other groups and say to them, now look, we know you have to give 99% of your time to this, but how about just this once, writing a letter regarding this as an organization? I think they'd be rather surprised at the network they could build up of influence.
And that is what happened in suffrage, basically, really.
Yes, yes, it did. We had a great deal of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed that they don't do more of it. They don't, from my point of view, make very good use of women as a whole. I mean, the small number of women that are ever going to get involved with now as compared with the number that sympathize with the overall aims and would be glad to lend their hands and perhaps advocating the passage of a specific bill or something of that kind.
In other words, to form coalitions with
exactly. Not to expect that they're going to spend much time on it, but that they are a group of women. Some of them will have had jobs. Most of them, they can take a vote. Most of them will probably be sympathetic to doing this little bit for it, and it would add up to a great deal.
Because I sometimes marvel at the fact that even though, in a sense, it was a safer issue and that it didn't challenge a lot of other values of the society, but still that suffrage did manage ultimately to include over 2 million women in its ranks in terms of,
yes,
of support, and wonder how. Now, how can we now do that for a battle that really is, as you say, much deeper and will have much wider impact, I think?
It was quite interesting when we were doing the organizing, of course, to see which women in these very small towns could be interested. In general, it was, of course, the women with better educations. Once in a while, you got a woman from the blue-collar group, but not very often. And in some cases, you got women whose husbands definitely were not crazy about suffrage at all, but they just said, well, so to speak, if you want to, go ahead, even though they didn't really go along with it. But they were mostly very substantial women. Those that were willing to come right out for suffrage and form a suffrage group, because that, of course, was my job, to leave behind a functioning branch, which would carry on whatever they were asked to do from headquarters.
You see, that is the difference between the two movements in terms of in a sense, the greater range of backgrounds that the women.
Oh, I think this involves all women, and I think that in a curious way, women recognize that. Even though they get awfully mad about the things, and even the older ones who want to hang on to everything they have and not let anything go, even they, I think, have a certain sympathy with it. And I have always felt that that's why they were so nitpicking about the smaller things. And in a way, I do it myself, in talking to you about the subjects that they discuss. In a sense, that's nitpicking, too. I just feel that it's a mistake that they're antagonizing a lot of people by doing it, and they shouldn't, just out of pure wisdom. But in general, I, of course, believe that there is no reason, if you study back far enough in history, you understand the basic foundations of marriage. It's perfectly true. It's been one of our most stable institutions, but that is no reason that it can't be re-examined in the light of our present-day situation, and especially now that there is so much clamor for a decrease in population. I think it's awfully silly the way many women talk about these things. But, however, I think young people, to the young people belongs the future, and I think whether the older generation likes it or not, these things are all going to be re-examined and rearranged. At the moment, of course, I don't see very much possibility of creating a permissive institution which will have, which can offer the stability that marriage has offered us, I think it's going to be a very unhappy environment for children if we marry and divorce at such a rate as we're doing now. It is tough for children to, they have enough things to learn about the world without having to adapt themselves overnight to a completely changed environment. It's very difficult. So I would hope that a good many people would try out. I've forgotten they have a nice name now for the marriage that isn't legal. What is it they call it? The little marriage? No? What is it? There's a colloquial name for it. But at any rate, after all, the Swedes have done this for years, tried out the thing first. Fine. But after they've tried it out, I would hope that after people had lived together for 3 or 4 years and found it companionable, then I'd hope they would go and get married before they have children. So I think it's awfully tough on the children to have a change. Mm-hmm. Well, those are things that the younger generation is going to work out for themselves.
But despite some of your criticisms, you really do wholeheartedly endorse the efforts of the modern...
Oh, yes, I do. I think it's ridiculous that they shouldn't participate. I mean, I was very happy that we succeeded the other day in electing that nice Mrs. Cohen to our council here in Claremont. I don't know her personally. I've heard a lot about her. We're now getting more women all around. Yeah, of course, getting them in where their faces show isn't the answer. Until they get really some real authority and knowledge. Of course, there is something to be said for the fact that big organizations say it with regard to minorities, that one of their troubles is not so much unwillingness as it is to find qualified applicants. The same is true with women.
I think that certainly has changed in many areas now. It's been very quickly changed in terms of...
Yes.
The areas that women are going into,
yes, I think
scholarships
so.
Being made available to them in all kinds of areas.
Well, and I do hope there's going to be a considerable change in the vocational advice that's handed out to beginning way back, much farther than college ought to be, in certainly in junior high and on up. There isn't any reason on earth why girls shouldn't plan, if they find they're especially good at mathematics, for goodness sake, so let them be. And let them take part in the new technologies if they actually fitted. One of my brother's daughters definitely was a whiz in mathematics, and now she's gone, finally, with her children all gone, is doing some teaching. Mm. But for a long time she did nothing at all with it. My brother was really quite a whiz, and one child obviously inherited his type of brain. But I don't think she was encouraged to do it at all. She certainly didn't take anything but an arts course in college. Well,
I don't...
Any
other closing comments, or...
No.
And then leave it with you to look at and make any changes you want before I send it on up for final typing.